Welcome, everyone, to In the Loop. What is up, everybody? My name is Michael Burpo. Thanks again for listening to In the Loop. This week, I am so excited. I am speaking with Amy and Steve from The Hills Jewelry. So they have a very special place in my heart because I met them before they actually even opened their jewelry store. And I met them at a trade show in Atlanta. They just had a name. They didn't have anything else at the time. And I got to sit down. I actually worked on their branding, and we created their logo at Punchmark. It was one of my first projects I did at Punchmark, as well as we do their website. So it was really a cool opportunity to be a part of their business at the very beginning, as well as kind of follow up with them at the end, and or I guess where they are right now. And they are the nicest people, and they really gave an awesome insight into the jewelry industry as a whole and what goes into opening your first jewelry store and the things you got to learn along the way, and really listening to advisors, but also keeping in mind what your goals and what you want from your jewelry store. It's probably my favorite interview I've done for In the Loop, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed speaking with them. Thanks. We'll be back next week, Tuesday, with more episodes. This episode is brought to you by Punchmark, the jewelry industry's favorite website platform. Whether you're looking for better e-commerce performance, business growth, or campaigns that drive traffic and sales, Punchmark's website and marketing services were made just for you. It's never too late to transform your business with a user-friendly, point-of-sale integrated website platform designed for growth and results. Sign up for your free trial demo at punchmark.com.
This episode is brought to you by The Smithy Group, a digital growth agency that helps leaders and businesses dream bigger and achieve multi-generational integrity. Through insights and intelligence, digital marketing, and advertising solutions, we help businesses expand their reach, grow their revenue, and make an impact. TSG has helped hundreds of businesses surpass their goals and believe that whatever your business, whatever your story, we will make it matter to your audience.
And now, back to the show. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Michael Burpo, and I'm joined for a very special treat, Amy and Steve from The Hills Jewelry. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good.
Thanks for asking.
So this is really exciting because, as I was talking about before we even started the show, I got to meet you before you even had your store, before things really even had got off the ground. I think we were at, the Southern Jewelry show, SJA, and I spoke with you guys before you'd even opened up. Man, you guys have come along so far since then.
Yeah, it's been probably about, since that discussion, probably about almost 4 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that long. It seems like it's been shorter, but it was 4 years ago. We were still in the planning phase of how and when we were going to be opening up our store.
Wow. So that must have been, 2018 or so. So at this point, we're recording this in the kind of middle beginning-ish of 2022. Man, so 4 years passes by in a blink of an eye.
Certainly does. We feel like it's been a whirlwind, really.
Yeah, we had a couple slowdowns with the pandemic, as you know. So right when we were getting started, unfortunately, we had to close pretty immediately, 30 days after we opened, which really created a hurdle that we just did not anticipate. And I don't know that anybody starting a business could. But you know what? Fortunately enough, we were able to kind of work through it. And but I won't tell you that it wasn't a stressful and kind of a little bit of a difficult thing to overcome.
Oh, I can only imagine, especially just starting out. I mean, it was difficult for long time established businesses. I can only imagine what it's like to have been open for only about probably a year, maybe a year and a half at that point.
We were only open probably about 3 or 4 months, and then the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. And so the obviously it was unfortunate, and we didn't know how long the pandemic would last or how long we'd be closed. I would say one advantage we maybe had a little bit is being a new business. We didn't anticipate breaking even right away as a business. So just because we were new, so we knew it would take time to build us up. So we had a little bit, of some cash flow that we could dip into in the event something happened. So in the short term, that helped us. But in the long run, we kind of dipped into some things that we wish we didn't have to. Yeah. But it allowed us to sustain ourselves a little bit longer, maybe because of that.
Wow. It's so stressful. I'm getting secondhand anxiety just from listening to that. That's insane. So maybe to start just at the beginning, and we'll just catch up to modern day. So being a jewelry store owner, that wasn't either of your first careers. You guys both led, you know, I guess prior lives leading up to this. What did you guys do before starting a jewelry store, and what made you want to open up a jewelry store?
So I'll start. I worked in the corporate world for almost 20 years prior to doing this. And the corporate world, while it has a lot of perks that come with it, it also is very stressful. And it also has a feeling of not being able to accomplish something on your own. And, you know, being subject to somebody else's sort of vision and obligations. And we saw an opportunity where we had the chance to do something on our own. And we jumped on it, you know, because we felt like if we didn't do it at that point in our lives, we may not do it. So let's, you know, do it at this point. But I would say having a corporate background helped from a startup perspective and understand what things we needed to think through to be able to even launch a business.
Yeah, so you kind of already had your business chops. Yeah,
so it wasn't related to jewelry necessarily, but it gave us some of the operational skill set that maybe we would not have otherwise had.
Gotcha. And what about yourself, Steve?
You know what? I came from a background of purchasing for a wholesale computer supplies distributor. And when I started with the company, we had approximately 6 employees and eventually grew into multi-regional locations, and over a series of years added about maybe 80 to 90 employees at the main location, which was here in Columbus. And we did some international trading and buying. And I think that that helped as far as my background goes with numbers and accounting and purchasing and inventory and shipping and receiving and those types of things, which, you know, in the jewelry industry can be pretty important to turn inventory, you know, accordingly and make sure that you're, you know, not hanging on to inventory too long, because that all amounts to cash flow.
Yeah.
And that, and I know that many jewelry stores in some ways have struggled with that. So we try to take a really close look at our inventory levels to make sure that hopefully we have inventory that's turning. And if it doesn't, look for opportunities or ways to try to keep that going so we can bring on newer lines and kind of, you know, phase out if we have to some of the older merchandise that's basically tying up cash flow.
Yeah. Yeah, I cash up the inventory, as I've heard. I think Dick Abbott might have mentioned in the in one of our interviews with him. Is that how do you guys kind of stick to those roles? Steve, are you inventory, and Amy, are you kind of running like the front of house, or what is your guys' roles look like?
I would say, you know, it is kind of interesting to hear our backgrounds than hear maybe how we sort of do it today, because it might be a flip flop a little bit.
Oh,
so I would
really?
Say Steve, yeah. And it did, I think it would just sort of naturally evolved into that. But Steve, I would say, probably is more so in the sales role. So he does a great job of, you know, helping us sort of acquire the customers, bringing them in and looking for the right target market. Whereas I do that too, but I also do a lot of the operational aspects of it as well. Probably a little more so than Steve.
And how big is your guys' staff at this point, if you don't mind me asking? Is it still mainly the two of you, or have you brought on additional help?
So we do have additional help. We did start that way initially. So we do have a bench jeweler that we have that does part-time on-site work for us. And then we have also some part-time sales associates that help us in the front. So we're the only two that are kind of, you know, the steady people here, I'll say, most of the time. But we do have 2 to 3 other people that'll do part-time work for us as well. And then anything that sort of falls outside of maybe that scope, we do have some external partners that we may work with local in the area to help complete some things that maybe we're not equipped with just yet.
Wow, that's really interesting. I'm especially interested in how did you find your bench jeweler? Because I get to see inside of a lot of the, I guess, the closed Facebook groups. And I sometimes see jewelers talking about, oh, my bench jeweler, my master jeweler is leaving and they are going to this city. Is anybody in that city interested in hiring a bench jeweler? Did you already know a bench jeweler in Columbus, or did you have to, you know, specifically hire someone for that role?
We had to specifically hire someone, but we've been on a little bit of an evolution with it. I would say initially, because we were onto what I would call our second bench jeweler. So the person that helped us start our business and create our shop that we have here, we actually met her through, Steve did actually initially, through some bench jeweler training that he took close to home here. And the folks that did the training for him actually referred this bench jeweler to us as somebody they knew was looking for, you know, some additional work. And so we partnered with her up front to not only use her to do, you know, the repairs and things like that, but to also help her, help us understand how do we set up the appropriate type of shop in our store. Mm-hmm. So we did that with her. And probably about 6 months ago, she had a great opportunity. She was offered elsewhere. So she took that. We still work with her kind of on the side a little bit, but then one of our sales associates also had a bench jewelry background. So we were able to leverage her, gratefully so, into kind of a dual position. So she not only does, you know, the bench work for us, but on days when she's not doing the bench work, she can also do some sales work for us too. So we have sort of a dual capacity with her going on right now, which is really nice.
Wow. It's one of those kind of aspects of business that I've never run a jewelry store, and I don't kind of expect to either, but I love hearing, because it's such a specialized talent that I don't expect there to be, you know, a million people that know how to, you know, operate as a bench jeweler. But I assume that, you know, there's got to be enough to kind of outfit all the different jewelry stores.
Yeah. You know what? I'll be honest with you. We've been extremely fortunate in our initial bench jeweler that kind of helped us with this venture and the setup from the very beginning. And I think her input was extremely critical in having input into the layout of, because our store was a completely new build out. Her expertise as far as how we were going to actually lay out the repair room. And of course, we were obviously a little saddened when she left, but we still keep in close contact with her. And Amy and I, you know, have discussed repeatedly about at some point, maybe we can afford to get her back. But our current bench jeweler is phenomenal. So we've just been very fortunate that we had somebody that was a backup to the original bench jeweler that we got into this kind of venture with.
Yeah. And I think the thing that was like helped us from the beginning with anybody we've had come into the store, bench jeweler, salespeople, is like, we've been very upfront that we are newer to the industry and we're very self-aware of what we do know and don't know. And I think that's allowed them to come in and us to leverage their expertise, rightfully so, because they've all been in the industry 20, you know, 30 plus years. And so being able to pull from them in areas that are, you know, not yet maybe our area of expertise has been really helpful. So it really has become a little kind of family here, that we do have a close-knit group that we feel like they've helped us get where we are. I think if we didn't have them, we wouldn't be where we are.
Man, that takes a remarkable amount of, is it hubris, or being willing to admit that you don't know the answer to everything and letting experts be experts. It's something that we try to at least follow in at Punchmark. We don't have people that are, you know, non-devs telling the devs how they should run their development. Instead, we say, you know, we'll let the development team kind of run themselves on that aspect so that they can, because they'll know the best. So I definitely agree. And I guess getting into something that you don't have a ton of insight into, what were your expectations for opening a jewelry store, and how were your preconceptions either, you know, right or wrong? I mean, with the exception of a global pandemic, which no one saw coming, but what else?
I think, the thing that's probably been interesting for me is, you know, as we did the business planning for the store, we had an idea of who we thought and felt like our target customer would be. And then when you stand up the store and you put it in the location, you see the people who are coming into your store, that didn't necessarily match. And it wasn't a bad thing, but it did change how we go about doing, you know, marketing, or what type of jewelry we bring in, or how we try to attract, you know, maybe what we initially thought was our target market. So it changed a little bit about, you know, just because you want it to be one way, it doesn't automatically mean that's the way it happens. And so we are a new store, so it takes a while to get your name out there. For me, that's probably been the biggest, I thought this, but it ended up like this. I mean, there's been other little things, but I would say that's probably the biggest variance that I saw coming into it.
Yeah.
And actually, Michael, when we met you in Atlanta, I can't tell you how many people, when we were initially introduced into the industry, and they were told that we were opening a new jewelry store, and we got, unfortunately, a lot of, I guess I would say it wasn't completely negative, but it was kind of like,
oh, you guys are crazy.
Yeah. Kind
of. Oh, you guys are crazy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man.
Like, that's nobody does much. That. You know, you usually you buy it from somebody. Nobody starts something from scratch unless you're somebody who actually is the creator of jewelry or something like that. So I do think we came into it, you know, like having to prove ourselves a little bit, and we still do. It's not that's over, but I feel like even, you know, some of our competitors and things like that are around us are probably like, okay, they're still here. You know, 4 years later, they're still,
yeah, they're still kicking. Here,
you know, they have a beautiful store. And so I think, you know, it's caused a little bit of like, wow, you know, and it's impressive, I think, in some cases when they see our store.
I also remember when you guys were opening up, maybe we were the ones that were doing it. I feel like the jewelry industry is remarkably forthcoming with a lot of trade secrets, you might call them, like people who are willing to show you the way. At least for, you know, when the jewelers that I've kind of spectated, it seems like everybody's willing to talk about how they run their own operation. Is that what you've experienced with, you know, kind of firsthand, or is it a little bit more difficult? You got to kind of learn through experience.
A little bit of both. I definitely still feel like, you know, that there's some people that we interact with that are very forthcoming and want to help, especially when there isn't like a threat to them, you know, like there's enough sort of either physical or sort of apparent, you know, customer difference that they're like, you know, yes, we're going to help you. And then there's some that feel like, I'm only going to give you so much because I don't want to expose, you know, my own sort of secrets of how I do things. I will say though, it is, you know, there's that aspect. And there's also the, sometimes when you're working, not, you know, with whether it's vendors or whether it's, you know, just people in your area, you have to create an environment where they realize they can trust you and that you actually do know what you're doing before they're going to help you. Because as we've discussed a little bit already, it's just, there's so many people that have been in this business a long time. And if you are somebody who says, well, I've only been doing it a couple of years, you're sort of instantly looked upon as like, oh, well, you don't know it all yet, which we don't, but it doesn't mean we don't know, you know, how to do anything.
Yeah. And we've been involved in some different Facebook groups and things of that nature. And there are a lot of extremely helpful people. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Thank God that there are, because we're far from the experts. But we do learn a lot in this industry. And I think Amy and I have come a long way since we opened the store. But it's been a bit of a learning curve.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, there's people have, obviously, you know, there's different ways to accomplish, you know, certain goals. And thankfully, there's groups out there that are extremely willing to help and offer different solutions on how to get things done, or places to find certain products.
And I think we've learned too, you know, going when we first started, it's like we weren't really sure what our sweet spot was and where sort of things maybe were outside of our boundaries, you know, where we could test that. And I think now we've tuned into that a little bit better, where we know we can do this and we can do this well. And then maybe this other thing is like, we could do it, but we might be best positioned if we partnered with, you know, XYZ to get it done. And we formed really good repetitive relationships, and mostly local really, which is kind of nice, with either other jewelers, maybe a little bit apart from us, or, you know, other trade entities that can help us get stuff done. And I feel like we have a nice set of vendors and partners that we work with that really help us, you know, for 95% of what we do, keep us pretty well-rounded.
Wow. Are you allowed to kind of divulge that information about, were there any things that you did try that you were like, ah, that didn't work out, or anything that you kind of stumbled across that you realized, oh, this is actually a real key part of our business?
I think where for us, that's probably, I would say, in the level of custom work that we do in-house versus, you know, external to us. And so I think we've learned, one, our shop that we have here is primarily set up for repairs, and I would say sort of minor some, you know, medium level fabrication. When it comes to doing something completely, you know, from scratch, hand done, we can do some elements of that. But then there's some cases where we really need to partner with somebody where that's 100% of what they do to get the same kind of quality product that we want. And so I would say that's probably like the customization threshold for me has been one that we've learned kind of where that is. And we want to grow to do more, but that it takes a little bit of time to do that.
Yeah. And the biggest thing too, is we don't want to sacrifice quality. So Amy and I both have an extremely critical eye and we look at details. I mean, her and I are both extremely detail oriented. And a lot of things on the surface, you know, a customer may or may not see, but we have to feel.
Yeah, but you see it.
Yeah, about what is going out of the store and what our name is being put on and what that piece is representing. And so it's extremely important for us to make sure that the quality of what we're putting out is at the highest level that it can be. Because ultimately, what you want is for people to leave the store happy with what they purchased and to tell other people about their experience. And that's what we feel like is going to drive future business. And so it's important for us to rely on, I guess, the right organizations to reach the highest quality. And sometimes that may sacrifice, you know, a level of profit, meaning, you know, you might not be able to make on a piece what you thought you were going to be able to make. So you take a cut on it. But at the same time, if you have a higher level of quality in what you're distributing, then I think ultimately in the long run, that is probably going to pay off more in terms of having those people maybe give you a great review, tell five or, you know, six other friends when they're out, you know, at dinner or whatever.
I think the other thing too is like knowing when to say no. So like, you know, as a new business, you want to be able, which we don't always do well sometimes still, but we're better at it. As a new business, you want the clients, you want the customers in the door. And so you don't want to have to tell somebody, no, we can't do that. Or not that we can't, or maybe we shouldn't do that. You know, you're more inclined to try to take it in and help them. And sometimes those scenarios where it's a stretch for any store, it'd be a little bit of a stretch. It ends up worse off. So like, I think we've learned sometimes that like, yeah, we want to help them, but maybe it's probably better we just say no and give them some outlets where they might be better, you know, served.
Wow. And that all comes from, I'm sure, lots of trials and tribulations and having getting burnt on something. I can only imagine what you guys have had to go through in just what, 4 short years. It's absolutely incredible. But I think we're going to take a very short break and we'll come back in just 1 minute after a word from our sponsor. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, everyone. Make sure to register for the Punchmark Workshop. The workshop will be held here in Charlotte from May 2nd to May 3rd. We will cover such topics as site manager, digital marketing, e-commerce strategy and preparation, and you'll have the opportunity to have roundtables with other Punchmark users and more. We will also have speakers from Punchmark Partners. This workshop will be limited to 60 attendees, so please register before it fills up. We hope to see everyone there. If you have any questions, please reach out to Jason at jason@punchmark.com, or you can call 704-910-4774, extension 301.
All right, everybody, we're back. I'm still talking with Amy and Steve from the Hills Jewelry in Columbus, Ohio. So at the close, you guys were mentioning how you've learned when to say no and also, you know, how tough it is sometimes to let something go. Have there been any like key decisions or key investments that have really paid off in the long term?
I would say one of the probably best, you know, decisions we made was the layout of our store and how it allows us to interact with customers. So I know that's kind of a big one, but one of the things that I think, you know, we're in a kind of a strip center where most of the other entities in there are either restaurants or some sort of convenience, you know, business. So we're the only really true retail in the strip center. And being new, when people walk in here, I think they are pleasantly surprised, like, wow, look at how like beautiful the store is.
It's nice
like
in here.
Wow. You guys really know it, you know, what you did, a really nice design. And I think that, and it's a very casual setting on purpose. And so I think it puts people at ease a little bit that they're able to come into the store and feel comfortable. So while we may have spent a lot of money in building out the store to have a certain look, like a home kind of look, I think that's probably been the most successful thing we did in terms of like the initial like setup. I don't know if you feel different.
No, I would agree with that. And one of the things that we really wanted to consider is how people would move around the store and how they would move around the showcases. And we definitely wanted to make it an ADA compliant place for people to come so that, you know, we wanted to, and we really thought about this up front, is what if we had people that came in that were handicapped, that needed a wheelchair access, that came in with walkers. We do have a clientele that occasionally comes in with walkers, with wheelchairs and those types of things. So that was something that we really kind of thought, you know, really hard about how they would move around the space and providing enough room to do that. And then I won't take credit for it. I'll give Amy the credit for this. But the back half of the store, we incorporated a working fireplace with kind of a living room type setup, which really has kind of helped people to come in and relax a little bit when they're trying to look at different ideas and different options about, you know, where they want to go with custom pieces. If they're redoing jewelry, there's a lot of people that come in looking for sentimental type pieces. And I think that space has provided a nice area. If a husband comes in while his wife is shopping, he can sit down and maybe read a magazine.
Yeah. I can already picture it in my mind. Yeah.
It's really provided kind of a beneficial space for people to kind of relax. And so it's, the layout has been very critical to making sure people feel like they're comfortable when they come in.
Do what's really interesting, and what I'm hearing kind of, at least the way I'm listening to your guys' stories, is it sounds like opening a new store, you didn't see it quite so much as a hindrance or like a, as starting off behind the competition. You're almost seeing it as an advantage or an opportunity to get things right the first time, you know, with like your store layout. It sounds like, because very easily, imagine how hard it is taking like a different store and then retro, you know, fitting ADA compliance or changing the whole thing. I mean, that would cost a lot of money, but you guys decided to get it right the first time, or, you know, really getting things right the first time. Like when we were working on your branding, I remember it was so fun to work on your website, because for the first time, your guys is, we were working on a website that the branding had all of the aspects and we could kind of expand it at the moment to really become inclusive and encompass every aspect of your website. So it sounds like, starting a new business, while it might initially seem like you're starting off, you know, on the 1 yard line, you guys kind of saw it as like the opportunity to really get off the ground running.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, we, you know, every business has its own sort of set of challenges, but I think, you know, how we differ from some of the businesses that have been in existence for a while, you hear a lot of those owners and staff people say, well, you know, my father has owned this, you know, for 20 some years, and they don't want to do stuff on Facebook, or they don't want to do, you know, some of these things, or, you know, Instagram, those kind of things that maybe some of the younger clientele are doing. But now it's sort of an expectation where, as for us with the store layout or how we go about things, we were able to start doing those things versus having to change from the old way of doing stuff or pricing and those kind of things. So that helped us for sure. It didn't come with a low amount of investment, but it definitely allowed us to start on a foot of at least what are customers expecting now, potentially sort of into the future. And you know, some of our hands-on display cases and things like that, like people want to interact with things. So that helps. So we tried to think of some of those types of things.
Yeah. And on top of that, I would say that the more well-established stores, you know, we have to keep in mind that it was a different time when a lot of these stores opened. And of course, things now have, you know, kind of progressed and moved forward. And sometimes people are looking for, you know, a slightly different shopping experience. Yeah. But those stores, when they originally opened, we certainly don't want to downplay, you know, anything that they have done, because they got established on how they originally started their stores. And Amy and I did a lot of research, and there are some beautiful, wonderful stores out there that we looked at. We did a lot of research. We visited ourselves. And so we were trying to pull information from all the wonderful things that other stores have already done and tried to incorporate small bits and pieces out of those, you know, to kind of put our own footprint out there, I guess, but at the same time, look at what kind of a shopping experience we would also like ourselves if Amy and I were out, you know, shopping for jewelry on our own.
Totally.
There are a lot of people that have obviously done it right because they wouldn't be in business for as long as they have been had they not. So, you know, thankfully there's stores out there that have been around for a long time that, you know, we certainly appreciate the aesthetics that they've already done to kind of look at, you know, and taking pieces of to kind of build out our own, you know, ideas.
And having the opportunity to kind of bake things into the foundation, you guys mentioned your social media presence. And I think it's, I've always kind of followed you guys as one of the clients that I keep up with the most too. I think you guys do a fantastic job on, especially on Facebook and Instagram with the photos you guys post and how things feel like it's in your voice, as opposed to some jewelry stores really miss the mark with that. I feel like either they come across really, really dry or really, you know, cut down. But you guys seem like it's part of the natural voice of your store. Has that been like a real concerted effort on your part to have a social presence?
It is. I will say, you know, it's something that's probably one of the bigger things I wish we also did more of, more interactive kind of things, you know, thinking of things like, you know, TikTok, those kind of things. It's a little outside of our comfort zone a little bit, but I would say it's something that, you know, we do personally. So that, you know, that is probably why it does also feel like it's in our voices, because we post it as if we're posting to our friends and, you know, like we're interacting with them. And so we do try to make sure it doesn't feel too canned or too cookie cutter, like, you know, like every other store when we can. And so, yeah, I definitely feel like we do put an effort on it, but I feel like that's probably an area where you could hire a lot of people to do that full time for sure and still not kind of do it all right.
Wow. So cool.
Social media has definitely been something that I think as time goes on, it's just going to become more and more important to kind of have a presence. And, you know, just being transparent, we're obviously not the youngest, you know, people in the social media game.
Not the oldest either, though. That's for sure.
Well, yeah, that's true. But you know, trends can come very quickly. And, different platforms of what people are on and what they're looking at and where you're getting your most views and things of that nature. And so I think in some ways you have to be willing to rely on people that may be a little bit more versed in those areas to say, hey, I need some ideas, but keeping in mind what your customer base is. You definitely don't want to come off, you know, as I guess for lack of a better term, corny.
Understandable. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to look at your customer base and say, you know, how are we going to get the best, you know, I guess, presence for the customers that are coming into our store and what that demographic looks like.
Absolutely. And another thing, I guess you guys have been very, I guess it feels very, intentional with all of your moves. I wanted to ask you also about the role that, e-commerce plays in your guys' business. Like we, had mentioned right in the beginning of the episode, how you guys were open for just a couple of months and then the world shut down. I saw you guys making, you know, a couple sales along the way. How do you guys view e-commerce, and was it difficult to get the process of fulfilling orders in place because you guys had to, you know, start that from scratch? Walk me through that.
So I would say, you know, e-commerce right now for us is, I would say, like, I would call it supplementary, meaning I would love for it to have probably a stronger presence than it does, but we tend to see it work real time in our store is people look at our website a lot to shop on their own. Mm. And then they will come in with, hey, I saw this on your website. Can I see it in person? Or I saw this, but it's not exactly what I wanted. You have something similar like to it versus actually completing the whole online transaction on the website. We do have some of that for sure. But I would say it's definitely less common than we would like. We also do have people that sometimes we use it to support us. So meaning there may be people that you know, maybe initially came in, but we kind of complete the transaction offline, meaning we'll put the product that they want on our website. That, so that way, when it's convenient for them, they can then go and check out.
Oh,
does that make
sense?
So we sort of do it that way sometimes too, just to make it easier for people. Cause sometimes we may not be located in the most, you know, best place for them. It's hard for them to get to it. So we may say, you know, hey, I'll send you a link to the product that you want when it's convenient for you. Go ahead and just, you know, check out there. So it just gives them the ability to kind of go home and think about it. So that's been working well too.
Wow.
Yeah. And I wanted to kind of add on to when we met you in Atlanta. You know, Amy and I did a lot of research about what kind of a point of sale system we wanted to incorporate with the store and how encompassing that was going to be for inventory control, which is kind of the world that I lived in. And, you know, looking at data and numbers and inventory turns and how this was all going to incorporate into our website and what that was all going to look like. And for everything else that we looked at, we really spent a lot of time in trying to determine what the best platform was going to be to accomplish that. And, you know, obviously we met you in Atlanta and we had a lengthy conversation. And fortunately, the Edge was critical, you know, in my opinion, to kind of making sure that all the back end of our transactions, our inventory control, how we were pricing repairs to, you know, the website. Punchmark was, you know, critical in that process of basically getting us the look that we wanted, you know, from our website and how that was all functionally going to, you know, to operate for us the best.
Man, it's really exciting though that you guys started out again with, you know, being new and listened to, I guess, advisors and listen to people instead of, it could have been very easy for you to go in and just, you know, have preconceived notions and really think that you knew everything and stumble into a, you know, into a cliff and have a really tough time. So I think that it's definitely commendable that you guys listened to different voices and actually took steps to follow through. So I got to give you guys all the props in the world for that. I'm glad that we were able to make that introduction to the Edge and get that started. So it's been really fun to follow you guys along. Maybe one last question, if you don't mind, or two, now that I think about it. You guys are newer to the jewelry industry, but now that you've had a couple years, I was wondering, has anything taken you by surprise about the industry? Or anything about jewelry making in general? Or is anything, I guess, worthy of comment about that?
I think, you know, the jewelry industry is, you know, extremely large industry, but it's extremely small at the same time.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the thing that I think both of us going into us didn't realize is that everybody knows everybody. And so, know, especially in our, you know, in your geographical area, is even though you may be 20 miles away from somebody, you know, everybody sort of interacts with everybody and knows what's going on, whether you think it or not, whether it's from the vendors or from it's, you know, whatever. And so I think that's the part that we assume that, like, oh, we're just going to be in our little, you know, corner of Worthington.
A little bubble.
Yeah. And so I think it quickly became apparent of like, oh, no. So, you know, if you talk to this person, they know that, which isn't a bad thing. But that even extends even beyond our geographical boundaries of realizing how there's a lot of key entities and people that most jewelry stores know, and you kind of have to be in the loop with those things. I don't think we anticipated that. It's not a negative thing. It just sort of is. We definitely didn't realize that going into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're obviously very careful about, I guess, offering information because we feel like we're still pretty new to the industry. We're more like relying on some of the knowledge of people that have been in the industry for a long time to kind of educate us, as opposed to the other way around. We still have a lot to learn and we completely understand that. So we're certainly still learning a lot, and we're learning from a lot of people that are still the experts and kind of entrusting in them to, you know, kind of educate us in the things that this industry is trying to offer.
Absolutely.
It's been a learning curve for sure, but we're still in the schooling phases, I guess.
So when you guys started out, it sounded like some people were like, you were talking about, oh, I'm going to open up a jewelry store. They're like, oh, you're crazy to be doing that. Maybe let's flip it on this head now that you're kind of down the path a little bit. Do you have any, you know, suggestions or tips or, you know, word of advice for someone else who might be considering opening their first jewelry store?
I would say, you know, my advice would be always stay true to who you want to be as a store, because that frames every other decision that you make. And sometimes that's hard to do because you do want to be everything to every customer that walks in. But I think that's helped us keep on point with, you know, our decisions that we make of like, well, we could do that, but is that really, you know, who we are? Is that going to be kind of our focus area and those kind of things? And I also think it's, and we've said it before, is, and we probably got caught in this too, is don't think you know everything, because there are a lot of very great people in this industry that you can learn a lot from. And there's some things that, you know, we did that were like, oh, we probably should have listened to that and we didn't do. And it's, you know, that's okay, because sometimes you need to learn stuff on your own. But I think there is, you know, you have to find that right balance for you as a business of knowing, okay, here's the framework of who we are going to be as a store. And then here are the things where I'm going to let other sort of influence or educate me to make sure it's the, you know, the best store it can be.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we tried to be very thoughtful and intentional about pretty much every aspect of how the store was going to be represented to the public and what it was going to look and feel like. And I think, like Amy mentioned, if you stay true to who you are and what you want that experience to look like, I think it makes the process a little bit easier, because you can kind of stay on course and maybe not deviate from a lot of other people's opinions about what you should and shouldn't be doing. And I'm not saying that people don't offer great advice, because they do. And it's that advice that a lot of times you can take and kind of listen to and then filter, you know, how you may want to incorporate that into, you know, what your future direction and plan looks like, and what that shopping experience is going to look like.
Well, I find you guys extremely inspiring, especially we deal with the vast majority of our jewelers. They've been around for, you know, 50 plus years, 60 years even. I just spoke with someone the other day that was a fifth generation jeweler. So it's so exciting to have some new perspective and new blood in the industry that can offer, you know, past experiences to the industry and, you know, shake things up a little bit. And it sounds like you guys are really taking a lot of advice from all the talking heads and running with it. And I can't commend you guys enough for it. So it's been really cool to watch.
You know what, Michael, we appreciate that. And I will tell you, we certainly appreciate everything that you have done, Punchmark has done, the introductions with Edge, and without those, you know, critical components, I think that it would be a heck of a lot harder to navigate that landscape. And fortunately enough for us, it's been definitely a lot easier to make that happen. So we are extremely grateful to you and to a lot of different people that have helped us along the way.
That's very kind of you guys. I can't thank you guys enough. Any last words before we kind of wrap this whole thing up? I think we've been going for about 45 minutes. I could talk to you guys all day about this. It's something I'm very interested, but I know that you guys have a busy store, so I'll let you guys end up getting back to this.
We definitely just appreciate the opportunity to share our story a little bit and hope we get to reconnect again, you know, in the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks again, Michael. We appreciate you.
I'll be following along the entire way. Thank you, everybody. If you want to visit their website, you can find it at thehillsjewelry.com. Give it a poke around. And everybody, we'll be back next week, Tuesday, with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you made it this far, remember to leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and try subscribing on Spotify. It really helps us grow. New episodes in your subscription box every Tuesday. Thanks again. Talk to you next week.